so little time, but I feel like you knew me. I keep my mouth shut, but think they'll see right through me. Has this all been one big loss? Hell, it's all because of us. If only they knew me the way that you knew me. Well, it all has been left up to us. No borders, no distance, just trust.
This is Comics Therapy, Episode 5. No reviews, just analysis. Today, we'll be talking in-depth about three books from August 21st, 2013. Dream Thief number 4, Nova number 7, and Number Cruncher number 2. So if you haven't read them yet, consider yourself warned. We're also diving into issues 7 through 12 of The Walking Dead, Volume 2, originally published in 2008 for our grief counseling segment at the end of the show.
Hey, this is Chrissy Myers, just calling in with my nerd confession. I am a sucker for marketing, and this whole concept album, music, songs that go along with comics that go along with songs gets me every time, and I cannot wait to read Super Spy. I've been listening to the song all day long on repeat, and the same thing happened with Na Na Na, with My Chemical Romance. So gets me every time. If anybody wants me to read their comics, put out a song, I'll do it. Thanks, guys.
Welcome to Comics Therapy. You know the drill. Neither Aaron nor I is a licensed psychotherapist. We'll be discussing self-awareness, destiny, and breaking free from the sins of the past while building for the future. No big deal. And it's all from this week's comics. We do urge you not to take any of the following banter as serious medical advice. And please don't look to us as role models for good life choices.
In between segments, as always, we'll bring you nerd confessions. Itching to get a deep, dark, geeky secret off your chest? Like you tried really hard, but actually hated Pacific Rim? What? I did. Leave us a message, and we'll feature it in an upcoming episode of the show. All the details are on the website, comicstherapy.com. Remember, kids, catharsis is cool.
If you're looking for us in between episodes, Aaron can always be found on Twitter, at Aaron Myers.
And Andrea is usually reachable at Andrea Shock.
The show account is Comics Therapy, but enough of that.
My name is Cameron Wozgo on Twitter, and my confession is I can't name the regular artist on 90% of my books.
Watch this. Aaron, how was your week?
All right. I turned old this week. Had a birthday on Monday.
You did. I was supposed to sing to you last week.
Well, there's still time.
I don't know.
It's my birthday
really
month.
Early in the morning.
So what? No one needs to know that. It could be really late at night.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear old man. Happy birthday to you.
Thank you. That was your Marilyn moment.
Oh, it was. Complete with scratchy 6:15 in the morning early voice.
Uh-huh. You're breaking the fourth wall. You're not supposed to tell people what time we're recording.
Well, this week is unusual.
Is this? Because we did it last week, too.
Not that unusual. In both cases, I'm on vacation and I'm fucking up everything.
Mm-hmm. Nope. It's your role.
That's right.
Birthday was fun. My wife set up a surprise party for me in the most appropriate way for me.
And how was that?
That was great. I got to have whole group chat, video chat with a bunch of friends from the internet.
So not an actual in-person surprise party, like most people are probably imagining.
No, but I don't like face-to-face. No, but that's seriously, everyone's everywhere, that's part of, Twitter and everything like that. And I made a lot of friends, over the last few years on Twitter. So Chrissy got them all, as many of them together as she could. And we all kind of talked comics for hours.
It was pretty excellent. I was incredibly impressed. Another week goes by, another shout out for your awesome wife.
Yep, that was impressive. So that was a lot of fun. And then, that was the day before my actual birthday. then on my actual birthday, we tried to go out to an early dinner. But you do that with a 3-year-old and a 3-month-old and a 19-year-old. You get one person who just sits and texts, the other who throws a tantrum, and one who starts screaming, crying for no reason.
It's fun to imagine it not being the ones that it probably was. Like, you know, the 3-year-old texting, the 19-year-old tantruming.
Mm-hmm. Basically. Yeah, they took turns. But that was fun, and got a big birthday gift, too, from Twitter pals.
Yeah.
So wasted that on a bunch of comic books.
Excellent. Anything fun?
A lot of stuff in preparation for Rose City Comic Con. So, like, putting together things to get signed, and I'm missing, like, you know, issues here and there, or I wanted to. Like, here's something extra geeky I do for Comic Cons. If it's a creator I haven't met before, I'll look up, if I don't know what it is, like, see what, like, their very first work was. And it's usually something totally obscure and not very, you know, expensive to find or anything like that. And I'll order some of those issues to bring to them.
Nice.
Yeah, it's fun because then I can, like, say, like, hey, or, you know, I'll look through it beforehand, too. And it's, like, I did that with Steve Lieber, and, like, it's a ton of fun because they look at it and they go, like, oh, this is the first one. And they'll kind of, like, get nostalgic, you know, or talk about, like, how they broke into the industry or something like that. So it's kind of a fun icebreaker that way.
Yeah.
So got a bunch of those, ordered a bunch of that stuff that I didn't have because it's just a bunch of weird issues for people that are going to be there. And things that I've just been wanting, like, yeah, just comics. I don't know. More comics. Can't go wrong.
So you had a pretty normal week.
Yeah,
comics, turning old comics.
Yeah, pretty much. It's definitely an interesting week of all kinds of stuff.
So, is it my turn to talk about my week?
Yeah, I guess so. Fine.
Because I have news.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
What's that?
I got a house.
Did you actually buy a house, or are you just...
No, I didn't buy a house, but I live in the Bay Area, and damn it, it's just as difficult to find a rental out here as anything else.
First world problems.
True enough. But the fact still remains that it's been almost 3 months since I started looking. It's possible some of you have heard about me whine about it on the internet.
Maybe.
And finally, we got a house.
Yep.
So I scheduled movers, all set. I can breathe a giant sigh of relief and move on to, like, the actual process of moving, which is nobody's favorite, but at least it's progress.
Yeah, and you guys have enough experience with that lately, too, so it's not going to feel too foreign.
Unfortunately, yes.
Yeah, yep.
It's cool because I scheduled the same movers as last summer, which was they were delightful. That's why I picked them again. And the guy said, yeah, I totally remember playing soccer in the backyard with your son. You guys were great. Yep, that's what I'm looking for in a moving company.
Right.
In fact, you remember that you played soccer in the backyard with my son. That is an extra little bonus point for you and your company.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's exciting. I mean, it is exciting because you're going to be that's a huge stress relief.
Yes. It's not quite there yet.
No.
But it's a different kind of stress now. Like I said, it's progress stress, and I can handle that.
Mm-hmm.
But just to make things more complicated, but in a good way, I'm still kind of on vacation back home, but now we have family visiting.
Mm-hmm.
My brother and sister-in-law and niece are out here, and that's been a lot of fun. We've been doing San Francisco touristy stuff. We went into the city yesterday. We went down to see the sea lions. Today we're going hiking up in Muir Woods. So it's actually a very welcome couple of days of focusing not on the move,
mm-hmm.
Not on really anything else except good family hangout time. And then I can hunker down and get all the work done and be settled in about 3 weeks.
I promise
not to talk about it exclusively for the next several weeks. I'll just give it an update when it's done.
Moving update.
Yeah.
When you guys moved to San Francisco, did you do all this touristy stuff? Have you done this before, or is this sort of like your touristy time too?
We actually totally failed at that.
Mm-hmm.
We had such a short window once we got here and were settled before school started. We didn't really have time to dive in as like newly relocated people. So, yeah, this has been good for us to get to know parts of our city that we had kind of ignored.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, we probably won't do them again anytime soon. They're very touristy on purpose. But
oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, it's the stuff that you do when you first either move to the city or you have people in town.
Right, right. Although we've been up to Muir Woods a bunch of times. We have a national park membership and do all that kind of stuff a lot. So that's an exception.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fabulous, fabulous park, an amazing resource, super close to the city. And Avi's a junior ranger. So we pop up there. This will be the third or fourth time that we've been up there. So that's good.
Hmm. Well, I don't think anyone cares. You want to talk about some comics?
Sure. Let's talk about comics.
All right.
Hi, I'm Leah, and this is my first nerd confession. We had an event for work where we all had to dress up as characters from Lord of the Rings, and they paid for our costumes. And even though there were cheaper options, I upgraded my order to the top of the line that was available so I could get it for free and keep it for myself. But I make a great Arwen, and it was totally worth it. Thanks, Comic Therapy.
Our first book this week is Dream Thief number 4, published by Dark Horse Comics. And Dream Thief is written by Jai Nitz. Now, I thought I knew how to say his last name. Now I feel bad. And drawn by Greg Smallwood.
Okay, Dream Thief is the story of John Lincoln, who recently killed his girlfriend and a lot of other people, or maybe he didn't. It turns out when John falls asleep, really crazy shit happens. He wakes up with no immediate memory of where he is or how he got there. And more often than not, he's near a dead body or seven. And even more crazy, he has the memories of deceased victims, not the ones he's killed, who have possessed his body as a means of getting revenge for their own death. John seems to have inherited this power from his father, and there's a creepy mask involved, because why not?
Mm-hmm.
And that is Dream Thief.
Yeah. That's the shell of it. This book has really grown on me. It's interesting because like it sort of got overshadowed for me initially because Dream Merchant came out at the same time.
Right.
Like they started.
And everybody knows how I feel about Dream Merchant.
Yeah, they're completely different books. It was just happened to be that two Dream books came out in the same week, and I think Dream Merchant got more attention. But this has been growing more and more on in my favorites. With every issue. And it's a really it's a really fascinating story. Even though it's violent and bloody, there's a lot more going on with this. I don't know. What do you feel about it?
Well, I think like Fatale and what was the other one that we talked about where we said the violence, I guess we touched a little bit on that with Bedlam. Mm-hmm. The violence in Dream Thief never feels gratuitous to me.
Mm-hmm.
We often don't see it happening. We see John's reaction to it. Not always, because we've actually seen him do some pretty crazy things himself as opposed to just recalling them. But there's a weird sense of justice there. I mean, it's not a superhero book, but it definitely is a couple of steps closer to that than maybe what I indicated in the recap. Mm-hmm. There is a kind of supernatural power that he has, and John has a desire to kind of make things right. And part of that is his recollection through the minds of the victims about how they were wronged. And so what he can do, or what his body as a vessel can do to repair that a little bit.
Yeah.
I'm not advocating violence as a way of making things better, but there is an eye for an eye kind of mentality here that seems to call it gratuitous doesn't really do it.
Mm-hmm.
To, coin a phrase, doesn't do it justice.
Well, that and it there's been an evolution of the character over these last four issues too. Like, I don't think he really started out with a sense of justice or anything. He was just sort of like a loser.
Hilariously a loser. And I think he's adapting and has had to adapt very quickly to this phenomenon of waking up with a dead person and another dead person's memories and skills too. We should point that out because in a way kind of akin to like Five Ghosts, he has this, he like absorbs the memories as well as the skill set of his, the previous possessed victims. So that has been very handy for him when he's been killing other people.
Yeah, it's nice to build your skill set, you know, for murder and mayhem.
Yeah. The thing that I find really interesting here is the potential link with his dad.
Yeah.
Like this is, he gets a letter kind of warning him, and his dad is in prison and has reached out to him after what, like 2 decades, right, saying, hey, son, this is some crazy stuff, and I think it's probably going to affect you. And if you ever want to chat, give me a ring.
Yeah.
So this idea of like the legacy of the power or whatever the fuck it is, I think is also really interesting because John has no idea right now, like what he's in for.
Well, it's also that mix of it's discovering your this legacy, but it's also coming to terms with the family issues too, and estrangement and betrayal and all kinds of stuff. I mean, I think that even plays into the story from the beginning, where he has these trust issues and, you know, relationship problems and all kinds of stuff that has to stem from childhood.
Sure. Sure. I think that's pretty clear.
Yeah.
I am so far relatively pleased that he's been kind of outside of the arm of the authorities. Mm-hmm. I think that this book would lose a little bit if it became the story of John staying one step ahead of the police.
Right.
It would be a different story. And right now he's staying one step ahead of like his own issues and his concern about what will happen the next time he falls asleep and how his, like now that he has this letter from his dad, like what does that say about everything? So it is much more John's self-discovery and less about the repercussions, like the legal repercussions of the actions that he's committed.
I mean, with every issue and with every action, though, his life is becoming more complicated. And it's not a matter of staying one step ahead of the law. It's kind of not having your waking life collapse because of your dreaming life. And it's all falling apart on him.
Mm-hmm.
And which is probably where I'm hoping the story kind of goes, like, you learn from, you know, you either learn from the past, the mistakes of the past, or you repeat them. And is he going to become his father? Will it be the same legacy, or will he learn from his father's mistakes and change destiny in that way?
Well, and he also has the mistakes of the other possessed people kind of mulling about in his brain.
Yes.
So he has those, he has potentially quite a bit of learning that he could do.
Yeah.
And he's certainly starting from or he did at the beginning when we first meet him, like quite a deficit in terms of positive contributions to society, right? He's a drug user and like kind of a loser when it comes to work. He's mm-hmm. bounced around with different attempted careers and hasn't necessarily been the best boyfriend. He is already in some ways like a more successful individual than he was in the very first issue, just because of some of the resolution that he's been able to offer some of these victims. Yeah. But it's a very kind of fucked up way of looking at the world. And we have no idea what causes him to get, you know, possessed. What a lot of people unfortunately meet their demise through some very unjust way, right? But like, what is it specifically that pulls him into the mix? We have no idea.
Yeah, and it's weird because I don't want us to make him sound like he's an anti-hero. It's more like the discovery of one's worth, I guess. Like, mm-hmm. like he, you know, in the beginning of the book, he doesn't really have value. He's not a valued person to himself or to others.
Mm-hmm.
But he's discovering his value is to make the world right in this way, or set rights, you know, set to fix wrongs and set rights in a you know, bloody and violent way, but it's a noir in that way. It's a supernatural noir crime thriller, I guess. It's hard to pin this to a genre too, mm-hmm. which is why I like it, because it has aspects of a lot of different kind of storytelling right. models, but it's unique.
But it's still not something that, or what he does is still not anything that would be celebrated publicly, likely.
Right.
But we, you know, his father probably went to prison for the crazy stuff that the mask had him do or is involved in some way.
But it is a commentary that what's right isn't always legal.
Sure.
You know, and I think that's a debate. You know, it's like, is an eye for an eye, or is justice when revenge is like, can revenge be justice? I guess is the kind of the question I get from this. It feels very satisfying in a book to see somebody who has done something horrible to someone else get what they deserve, quote unquote. But it's not really how the tenets of our society is built.
No, and not every victim that he has helped by way of possession and then vengeance has been a squeaky clean individual either.
Right.
So
is this just everyone getting what they deserve? Both victims and victimizers?
I guess. I'm really interested to see the difference between the way that John is currently handling things from his father, and ultimately I assume that we are kind of watching him pursue a path that leads him in a different direction ultimately from his father.
Mm-hmm.
We certainly don't want him to end up in prison. So what can he do? What can he do differently? How can he escape, like you said, those past sins, which are indisputable? He has killed a pile of people at this point, and no jury in the world is going to care that he is possessed at the time.
Right.
But there is a...
That's taking the Twinkie defense to the next level, isn't it?
Just a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But there is some kind of higher power or other power involved here, obviously. So why didn't it help his father out, and why so far has John been able to kind of skirt around the issue of the violence that he is perpetuating? And I think that makes for kind of a fascinating story,
mm-hmm.
a really interesting conflict.
Yeah, I'm very excited to see how it plays out and if there'll be more after this. You know, I don't know if this is a mini with plans for more, or right. or if it's going to be just self-contained in a couple more issues, but definitely worth everyone checking out and don't miss it.
I wanted to give a quick shout out for the Small Press Expo. It's in Bethesda, Maryland, just outside of D.C. It's on the Red Line, so if you live in D.C., you have no excuse not to go. It is the premier festival for independent comics and cartoonists. It is so awesome. We have Peter Bagg coming this year. We have Adrian Tomine and John McNaught, Lisa Hannawalt, Ruchi Modan, Jeff Smith. Jeff Smith of Bone is going to be there. He will be signing your books. Congressman John Lewis from Georgia, he just wrote a book called March, and it is super awesome. We have so many awesome people coming, and it's just $10 for a day, $15 for 2 days. If you were in Philadelphia or Baltimore or New York, come down from New York. It's totally worth it. This is going to be awesome. September 14th and 15th. I hope to see you there.
Well, we're ready to move on?
Yeah, absolutely. Next up, Nova number 7, written by Zeb Wells with art by Paco Medina and Juan Blasco, and colors by David Curiel. Nova is published by Marvel Comics.
Okay, so what's Nova about? It's about 14-year-old Sam Alexander. His father, Jesse, was part of the Nova Corps, a special ops team, before he was born. Sam has only recently learned about his father's heroism. Rocket Raccoon and Gamora, the Guardians of the Galaxy, they train Sam on how to use his father's helmet after his father went missing. So recently Sam has been helped bring down the Phoenix Force, securing an invitation to join the Avengers from Thor. and pretty much single-handedly defeated the how would you even say that?
Chitauri. Didn't you see Avengers?
Yeah, but my brain's not working right now.
Right.
Yeah. You didn't have to call me out on it. And saved the planet. He picked up the ultimate nullifier in the process and turned it over to his new best friend, the Watcher, who lives on the moon. Having gotten a taste of superheroism, Sam zips around New York City and L.A. and runs into Superior Spider-Man and trying to do some good. There's a lot going on, and it's kind of a mess.
How do you feel about this book, Aaron?
I don't like it. It's been disappointing the whole run for a multitude of reasons. Like, I want to step back and say, like, oh, this book is terrible. There's much worse books out there. But I think the execution is very muddled, you know? And this is, I think, what we want to talk about. Like, you've kind of, maybe I'm wrong, but it seems like you've been championing this book here and there and then turning against it too. Like, I think you wanted this book to be much different than it's turned out.
Yeah. I really kind of dug the first several issues. The creative team has shifted. Mm-hmm. And I think that we're seeing a tone change and a story scope change as well. When we first met Sam, it was set before the events of Avengers versus X-Men, the event from last summer. Yeah. And so it was before Sam had learned how to do all the cool stuff when he's wearing the helmet and before Thor had invited him to be an Avenger. And it was this 14-year-old kid really pissed off at his dad, having no understanding of the history of his dad's past deeds, thrust into a situation where his dad goes missing and like a talking raccoon shows up. I thought it was kind of delightful, and I especially thought it was exciting because I saw it as probably the only book in the Marvel Now lineup that could have been or should have been written for all ages. Mm-hmm. You got a 14-year-old protagonist, and he's kind of a smartass, but not in a bad kid kind of way. He's a kid, and he talks like he's a kid. And he's got some trouble at school, and he's got some trouble at home. And I just thought, man, this should have been a book that I could share with Avi. And it's not. It's a little too violent. The language is, like, a little too objectionable. And so, yeah, I've been championing this book as a potential, but ultimately a failure on Marvel's behalf. Mm-hmm. To make this more accessible and to, like, could we please have one book in the entire lineup that is related to, like, the larger continuity that is appropriate for, like, the next generation of comics readers? Please? Could that be a thing?
Yeah.
But apparently not. And now I'm not happy with where this book is going. I feel like the part with his dad that was so interesting as a coming of age story has been pushed aside pretty significantly. And now we've just got this punk kid, like, trying to be a superhero.
Yeah. Right.
But not even in an intriguing way, mostly just in a punk kid kind of way.
Yeah. So, it really dumbs down the, what would you do if you got superpowers? Oh, I'd just fly around and, you know, punch bad guys.
Right.
Like, okay. I think that's what a 35-year-old person who is trying to write a book for a 14 or a 10-year-old or a 14-year-old would think. And maybe it comes off almost like condescending in that way.
Mm-hmm.
That it's, I think writing a good all ages book is the hardest book to write.
Because
you have a lot of responsibility to write something that is appropriate for quote unquote all ages, but you also want to make it engaging for all ages and interesting. And that's not easy.
No. And that's what I think has happened with Nova that the themes that we saw at the beginning in the first arc could have done that.
Yeah.
That there was enough there for younger readers and older readers. And in this case, also balancing like the larger canon that, that established readers would be interested in. And then it just kind of took a nosedive and copped out so that some of that becoming a superhero stuff that could have been really lovely and been much more about Sam discovering his potential. And I assume we're still building towards him saving his father, but like that relationship exploration going a little bit deeper, we've stepped away from that. And now he's just getting in Spider-Man's way. And I mean, although it is, you have to admit, it was hilarious when he was like, Spider-Man's kind of a dick.
Sure, but that joke, that the Spider-Man joke is good for maybe another couple of months, and then it's going to start really wearing thin.
Sure. It's also a joke just for older readers.
Yes, because, I mean, you're probably not letting your kids read Superior Spider-Man, or they have to be a little older, I think, for them to really... I wouldn't, give it to my 8-year-old or 10-year-old.
Right, but I'm not letting him read Nova either.
Yeah. I don't think Nova pushes... I don't know. I probably wouldn't have much of a problem letting my kids read that if they were, like, 8 or 10. But I don't think it's that good either. I wouldn't want it to, like, say, like... I mean, that's kind of my problem. Like, it's okay. The art's good. I mean, it looks nice. The writing, I think, has just kind of been subpar. I don't know if people are just kind of being shuffled around on it. Maybe Chet Wells just isn't very passionate about the project, and it comes off. But we don't have a ton of his arc yet either. So it might be early to be commenting on this. But I felt the same way. Like, from the beginning, this didn't really interest me. It didn't really interest me for different reasons, though. But I kind of feel...
But Jeff Loeb wrote the first arc. Yeah. Did you like that one better?
No. And I didn't...
Do you like the conceit of this new, younger Nova?
I don't mind it, but it doesn't... That's where I'm coming from. Like, I'm not even thinking of this as an all-ages book, other than my feeling for all-ages books are they should be fun for everyone to read.
Mm-hmm.
And I never felt, even with Loeb, that it was that fun for me to read. Like, it felt, a lot of the stuff felt forced, it felt very transparent, and it lost the thread. Like, the initial, I liked the first issue, I liked the potential it had, and then it just seemed to kind of lose that really quick.
Because I remember in the first arc, specifically, when he gets the helmet and he goes flying for the first time, and there was a very magical sequence as he was in that way. I felt like this middle-aged man who was writing a kid absolutely nailed it. It was exciting. It was new. He was, Sam was, just like so taken with this, holy shit, I can fly. And yet he couldn't control it very well. He ended up in a couple of places that he shouldn't have. I mean, he goes up to the moon, for goodness sakes. So I, in a lot of ways, there was this like innocence there that separated him from his father and like the level of soldier, basically, that his father was. And now... Despite just the kind of brief training that he has from Rocket Raccoon and Gamora, now we're expected to believe that Sam has all of this misplaced confidence in his ability that I just didn't see in the Sam that we met in the first arc.
The consequences haven't been real, quote unquote, realistic enough, I think. You know, like that's important for an all ages book too, that like, yes, these are fantastical situations and there should be the joy of finding out your powers or exploring your powers. And then it's the Spider-Man. It's the great power and learning responsibility. And there's been a little bit of that, but it's been so like, if you fight these bad guys, I'm going to come back to get you. And, you know, you and your family might be in trouble. But, you know, hey, now I'm going to go to New York. You know, it's right. There. That should be fleshed out more. That is the interesting parts of the story.
Exactly.
That you can have these intense situations, you know, and exciting situations, but it's not free. And that's an important lesson for kids to learn. And I think it's good for books to kind of reiterate that. Like, that's the reality of the world that they have to live in, whether they're or not the books they're reading are reality based or not. And it's not addressing that the way it should.
Right, right. It may get back to it, though.
Yeah.
As because we see at the end of this issue that Jesse is still alive. I'm sure, like I said, I'm sure that we're building towards getting him back somehow, and that Sam is going to play a role in that, hopefully with some help. I mean, because let's be honest, the stuff that happened with the Chitauri, where he basically did it all himself, and yet this alien race had taken out like many other right. planets beforehand. But right. Sam's on the job now, so everybody's fine. I think they're folding him into Infinity, right? Because
I think everything gets a
back
tie-in.
On. Right, he's back on Earth while everybody else isn't.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe when we come out of that second arc and we see where Sam is as a 14-year-old kid, and what he values, then I might feel differently, not only about the book, but also about the book for my own kid. Yeah, I guess ultimately disappointing, but not, I'm not writing it off. Like, I'm still reading it.
Okay, good. I think this is something we should revisit in the fall once, you know, this, the summer events are all done, and
mm-hmm.
we get to see how Wells, you know, grows the character, or if he does.
Right.
So we'll circle back around.
Excellent.
Well, you ready to move on?
Yeah.
All right. Let's do it.
Hey, this is Tony Doug Wright of Champion City Comics and the Two Headed Nerd Podcast. I am one of the many love slaves. Larry Hama is my favorite comic book writer. I have zero interest in Game of Thrones. I was an avid reader of Choose Your Own Adventure books. Dune is one of the most boring books I have ever read. I started reading comic books in 1980, but I never read a DC title until 2002. Spawn is the worst comic book movie ever. The Flash has the best villain. I don't get manga or anime. I've played various role-playing games, but I've never played Dungeons & Dragons. Alright, Rush is not a thinking man's band. They're just an average rock band. And finally, Matt Mania is my favorite arcade game of all time. Thanks. Bye.
Our next book is Number Cruncher, number 2. Written by Cy Spurrier. Drawn by P.J. Holden and colored by Jordi Belair. It's published by Titan Books. Andrea, tell me about it.
Okay, so Bastard Zane is sort of like an agent of death. He works for the Divine Calculator, who's sort of like the big guy upstairs, except there's not really a guy. There's not really an upstairs. And in this book, the premise is the universe is actually one big churning algorithm. All Zane wants is to retire in peace, but he has to find his replacement before he's allowed to do so. Enter the mathematician, who in 1969 strikes a deal with the Divine Calculator to be reincarnated after his untimely death so that he can see his true love again. And in exchange, he will take over for Zane when he dies. Except that the mathematician is a genius. Maybe even on par with the Divine Calculator. And he games the system. So now he's on the run from Zane. He's trying to avoid death again and again before he hooks up with his lady love. And he's not above a system of elaborate backup plans. And poor Zane just wants to retire. He also is written with an amazing Cockney accent. So in my book, that means that we're clearly meant to root for him because he is super fun to read. And we connect with his desire to just kind of be done and move on with his life or afterlife or whatever.
Kind of. I'm not really rooting for him, actually.
I said it in my book.
Yeah. I mean, well, who is the hero of this book? That's kind of the question, I think.
I think it's absolutely Zane, but you can root for the mathematician. It's fine.
I don't know. Maybe I'm a romantic at heart. Like I root for them both, and maybe that's okay. Where we end up.
Okay.
Like Zane's life is not like his life, his death, and then his afterlife are not particularly something that I root for. Like it's almost like, yeah, you at least got what you got what you deserve, and now you're being put to work for what you're good at.
Oh, but he's such a, I don't know. I think he's super fun. I think as a archetype, he's the kind of character that in many stories and many movies I have found to be extra entertaining and very sympathetic. Because you're right, he was basically a criminal, and he's doing not admirable things in his afterlife.
Yeah, he's an enforcer.
He's working for the man, and yet, he's like a low man on the totem pole, and we do sympathize with him because the poor guy just can't catch a break.
Yeah. And but there's I don't even know where to start with this book because I mean more than that I like the I like the theological discussion going on.
Yeah.
That I'm kind of becoming a little bit obsessed with Cy Spurrier lately, especially with Six Gun Gorilla. After reading that, I went and bought like his old Silver Surfer run and a bunch of his stuffs in like the Marvel Strange Tales and everything like that. Like he's a really good creator and comes up with very interesting premises for things. I really like this discussion of divinity versus the universe kind of just being numbers, which is, I mean, I think any mathematician or scientist will agree that there, the order to the universe, like there's nothing's random. Nothing is divine in that way, that it's all planned out and running. It's just very complicated. And that's something I kind of always struggle with personally, like in terms of, how does the universe run, and is there a god in that way? And you know, I don't consider myself like an atheist at all. I'm definitely an agnostic because I just have no, you know, it's too complex. Like we just don't even have scratched the surface of how deep the universe functions. So I kind of like that as a commentary of the behind the scenes, and it reminds me a little bit of did you ever see the movie Defending Your Life?
No.
No, it's one of my favorites. It's sort of the, what happened, it's like the purgatory. After you die, you kind of have to go, and your life is judged, whether you get to move on and ascend, or you go back to Earth to, to try it again. And it's sort of that after, the golf carts especially kind of reminded me of that in the afterlife. But it's a fun, the whole kind of like the chase and the betrayals and the double cross and everything like that are nice kind of plot devices, but really this is a commentary on divinity, the afterlife, and our place here on the earth and in the universe.
And what about the commentary on love?
Yeah, that's the anomaly, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because
it doesn't fit into the system, right? It's not predictable. And I think, again, I think that Zane is a really interesting character because he's outside of the, like, he's not human. He's not experiencing the same things any longer. He has a single motivation, which is to find his replacement so that he can be done. And so he's completely taken aback by the extent to which the mathematician will go for time with his love again.
Yeah.
And I think that that's, I think that's really interesting because it doesn't fit into the Divine Calculator's system.
Well, as a mathematician too, like the idea of love being something other than, you know, a mathematician or scientist or something like that, the idea of love being something other than a physical response to mating and procreation, and you know, it's like what have we built around love, but what is it really like? You know, that's another scientific versus kind of spiritual question. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting to have somebody who is a genius mathematically being so being driven by this spiritual kind of quest,
mm-hmm.
to be reunited with his love,
who incidentally is very loosey-goosey spiritual,
mm-hmm.
herself. You know, she's not a scientist.
Yep.
She subscribes much more to the spiritual belief system. She's not overtly religious, but she is very different from him in terms of world view and philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
So that's also kind of interesting in terms of a commentary on who we love. And in this case, where we're meant to believe that it is true love, it is something that he will give up everything for. We don't know very much about her, except that she very quickly recovers from his first death.
Hey, maybe she doesn't love him as much as he loves her. Or is it this attraction? Like, is it in the numbers that no matter who they are, they will attract to each other?
That's interesting that the Divine Calculator himself could have much more of a role in the pairing than what we have been seeing so far.
Yeah. So that's something I'm interested to see unfold, that, you know, the Divine Calculator is unreachable right now. He's not taking, you know, not taking calls. Like, is he, yeah, it is. You know, is this out of his control, or is this all part of the plan?
Mm-hmm.
And is this more...
Is this a miniseries?
Yes, it's the 4 issues.
Okay.
So I'm kind of interested in that. Is this more the education for Zane as it is the escape for the mathematician?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what we're going to see in the next couple of issues. So everyone should be checking this out. It's hard to find in print. They're, you know, Titan Comics, you have to really pre-order stuff, but you can definitely get it digitally,
mm-hmm.
easily. And I believe this came out a long time ago, actually. And I think it came out in like one of the Judge Dredd magazines, sort of like how like Snapshot did.
Got it.
And then it was collected and I believe recolored. Like, I don't think any of it was colored, so I think some of it was reworked afterwards to kind of make it more issue friendly.
There's actually some really lovely stuff. I know we don't often get into that, which is kind of bizarre given my background. We hardly ever talk about art. Mm-hmm. But there is some lovely stuff happening with the way that this book is colored and the separation of the worlds. Now I'm interested to go back and see if I could find how it was packaged initially, because I think that is it's a very successful way of telling the story.
Yeah.
Right now.
Yeah, definitely enhances the story for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, we don't usually get into that, but I think it's worth noting because that's definitely part of this whole world unfolding.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we'll see how that plays out. I'm sure it's already been predetermined. It's all in the numbers, but but we'll find out soon enough. You ready to move on to our next part? I'm looking forward to it.
I'm sure you are.
Right, let's do it.
This is Captain Cummings, and I have a nerd confession. The Avengers movie was like a comic orgasm, and I'm sleeping on all the other ones. So in short, I don't really care about comic book movies. Sorry, that's all.
It's time for everyone's favorite new segment, grief counseling. Well, everyone but Andrea. Every week, she's going to read one volume of The Walking Dead, the comic that got me back into comics again. And that comic, up until now, she has refused to even consider.
Because zombies are the fucking worst, still. And if you did not catch our last episode, yes, I know this story is metaphorical. I am so far from that. I'm sorry. Like, there is not a damn thing that is not scary zombie shit in terms of my response to this book.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
I finished volume 2 last night. I read most of it last night, as a matter of fact. Mm-hmm. So, I hate you for my dreams. Mm-hmm. I hate my brain for my dreams even more. Mm-hmm. Because I took some of the ideas that we see, the situations from volume 2, and just ran with them, or my brain did, all night long. Mm-hmm. Not particularly restful. Yeah. There's a lot more, like, really overt commentary on society in the second volume. Mm-hmm. It's a lot wordier. Several times the characters are stating how distrustful they are, and yet they need to rely on one another, and they have hope for rebuilding, and yet that hope is constantly being pulled out from under them. And I think it's obviously just a natural evolution. As more time has passed, they are coming to terms with the situation, and yet they have no idea the scope of how bad things are.
Yeah.
And so, like, my anxiety as I read this and afterwards is through the roof. The constant fear that at any point things can just be so fucked because they're never safe. I cannot handle that. Like, I'm serious, Aaron. I don't know how much longer I'm going to be able to read this because it's really unpleasant for me.
Yeah. Oh, it only gets worse.
Why are you happy about that?
Because it is, yes, this can be heavy-handed at times. I think Kirkman's writing also gets a lot more refined as it goes on. I think it's also important kind of to set that stage in a little bit of a heavy-handed way. That, you know, what do you do when you're panicking and, like, the world is chaotic? You almost start doing, like, exposition, you know? I don't think it's unnatural for people to kind of, like, be almost talking to the fourth wall when mm-hmm. the world is crazy around you. It's almost right. like you're having to talk out loud and say things that's like, yeah, no duh. You know, it's like, that's the only way sometimes you can parse things. So it doesn't seem that unrealistic to me.
They are processing in their own ways. And actually, from a character standpoint, that's kind of cool because everybody is handling it slightly differently. Mm-hmm. Everybody's losing their shit at different points, and the breaking point is pushed a little farther for some, and the triggering event for others before they completely break down is, you know, more extreme. Yep. So I'm okay with that commentary, and I'm okay with the wordiness. I'm just not okay with the premise. It is still, like, such an overwhelming, obstacle for me to get to the point where I can talk about the societal commentary, because it's still about zombies.
If this was about, I don't know, you know, monsters, like werewolves. Werewolves take over and start killing everyone. Would it be easier to read?
No. Okay. No. Because the combination of collapse of the things that keep our system in check with the loss of individual control is what I fear. It's what I respond to intellectually and emotionally. It's the same reason why I hate flying, right? I have no control of the process of flying. Mm-hmm. And I'm not, despite what it sounds like, I'm not a control freak. I just, I like to know what the plan is. I'm not a particularly spontaneous person, despite really trying hard to be. But I have grown up within a system and I respond positively to that system. So if you remove that system from me and like the structure in place that keeps that system running, like I flounder and I know that about myself. So whether it's monsters or werewolves or just some sort of plague where everybody dies, no zombies, just death.
Mm-hmm.
The system is still broken. And I still am not equipped to survive outside of the system. So
yeah.
Maybe
right.
The
but
reason
not,
why
but
I fear
But you're not
this
having
is,
to, though.
What?
Well, you're not having to. I mean, that's what I like, is that this is a survival tale without that's the point of literature, is that you can kind of experience and parse these
it's
things
just a
without
book,
having
Andrea.
Well, I mean, it is, right. It evokes the emotions but without the consequences.
Sure. But we were just talking about Nova, and the reason why it's not successful is that it doesn't delve into the consequences. And so,
well, what I mean is, like, you're not reading it and you're not having to shoot zombies busting through your door.
This is true, yeah. But the consequences are very clearly presented.
Mm-hmm.
And so my brain does not need a whole lot of information to come up with like a whole slew of other worse consequences that then I dream about all night. So I guess for me, literature is incredibly important. And I read constantly, but I appreciate the escape and I appreciate the, like the positive escape. Not everything has to end up okay, but in this, so far, the terms of the world are so dire that I don't know what I'm reading for. Like, I don't know what the end goal is besides survival, and maybe that's not enough for me.
Well, what's the point of life, then?
Well, the point of life is more than just surviving. It's relationships, and it's experiences, and it's opportunities. And right now, none of those are being given the chance to develop, mm-hmm. because life is only surviving.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, it is such an overwhelming situation that they are all in. Like, it's devastating to even start to imagine what that would be like. Now there's going to be a baby. Are you fucking kidding me? We're going to talk about bringing a baby into this totally non-world. That I am sure will be a major plot point moving forward. But that was, talk about devastating. Like, that was terrible news as far as I'm concerned.
I know, but isn't that also, it's terrible news, and isn't that how powerful that is, that a new life being brought into the world is, like, disheartening?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, there's not a lot of hope in the second volume.
Is there hope ever? I mean, you don't have to tell me that everything ends up okay.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly, that would be a lie. But is there eventually more than just surviving that everybody can work towards?
Yes.
That was not...
I'm not going to say anything more than that.
There was a little bit of hesitation there.
Yes.
Well, every time I start reading and I kind of go off the deep end on the internet about this book,
mm-hmm.
inevitably, multiple people respond and say, "You haven't even gotten to the worst part yet." Fuck you. Are you kidding? What could be worse?
Who knows? I think that's 6 weeks from now.
Oh, God. That's a long time of... just being miserable.
Hey, life is misery. That's what The Walking Dead teaches you.
Can we go back to Number Cruncher? Because life was about love there. It was much more pleasant.
There's plenty of love in The Walking Dead. You'll see.
Okay.
Yeah. It's okay. Good. It's good. It's all good. I'm glad you're enjoying it. Wait, or did I miss something?
Yeah. I don't think enjoyment was a word that I used ever in my description of the process of reading this book. So.
I think I also like you reading it because it's sort of like, I think I even mentioned this before, it's like The Ring. Like, you have to pass it on to someone else, otherwise you die.
Do you think that I have seen The Ring? Oh. Do you think that there's any part of me that would
enjoy
the experience of watching something like The Ring?
I smell a special edition podcast.
Oh my god, I hate you.
Well, that's a good place to end it then, huh?
Yeah, I think it's definitely what has to happen now.
Well, great. Let's do the outro. And another week goes by. Everything you ever wanted to know about us or the show is at comicstherapy.com, including details on recording your nerd confessions, contacting us or the show, and subscribing. Also, Andrea writes really masterful show notes that everyone should read. She also writes the script, which is how she got me to say this just now.
I can't believe that worked.
You put something in front of me, I will read it. I should be on Fox News.
Awesome.
Well, thanks for listening, everyone. See you next week.
Now, usually I don't do this, but go ahead on, break them off with a little previews of the remix. Now, I'm not trying to be rude, but hey, pretty girl, I'm feeling you. The way you do the things you do reminds me of my Lexus cool. That's why I'm all up in your grill, trying to get you to a hotel. You must be a football coach, the way you got me playing the field. So, baby, give me that.